Collectors, let's talk about the real villain in your collection. It's not Dr. Doom, it's the dreaded box stack. You know the one, piles of sagging boxes, and the issue you need is always in the bottom box. When you lift, you pray your spine survives. If your comic boxes are stacked like a game of Jenga, it's time for Drawer Boxes, the easy access storage solution from CollectionDrawer.com. Drawer Boxes are stackable up to 6 high, but you don't have to unstack anything to get inside. Just slide out the drawer and you're opening a treasure chest of comic glory. And just like any file cabinet drawer, they'll hang open on the own while you peruse your collection, thanks to their patented box locks box anchors that secure each unit so that they won't tip. Worried about a drawer slipping out and dumping that near mint run of Ultimate Spider-Man on the floor? Not a chance, but their patented locking tabs that keep drawers securely locked into their shell until you're ready to remove them. Let's talk box sort upright dividers. They keep your comics standing tall, sorted by title, issue, era, whatever you like, and make it easy to file. No more leaning stacks causing spine cracks. So ditch the lifting, ditch the chaos. Drawer boxes turn your collection into a library, not a workout. Visit CollectionDrawer.com and start enjoying your collection today. Doesn't your first Deadpool appearance deserve better than being buried in a cardboard coffin?
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at Kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week. And we got some big ones this week, so let's get right into it.
Some big ones.
Normally, a couple of big ones. Small to medium size. But
because of a misprint, all of our comics were like four times as big. So yeah. I had to hold this one up on the subway like an idiot.
That's why. Not because they're large print, because our eyesight is getting bad.
No, anyway, we're not getting older. We're getting cooler.
Hey, can we get bigger comics? That would be really helpful.
You can, actually. I don't know if you've been checking out the Batman Hush comics, but they've been printing them enormously.
That's really helpful.
And that's because, you know, the biggest comics are always the best ones.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's why Sunday comics were so great.
Another thing that is always a sign of quality is when they're polybagged, like the Punisher Red Band number one from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Julius Oda. Great news. The whole backstory of the Punisher, the whole controversy around him in terms of him inspiring paramilitary groups and rogue cops in the real world, that's done with. We're good, folks. So Frank Castle is back with the skull and all in this new bloody Red Band series. Pete, you're a big fan of cops having impunity taken away.
Wait a second. What the fuck just happened, bro?
What up? You said you were very excited about this on the live show, and I assume it's because you like people appropriating the Punisher symbol and letting him do whatever
you
they want.
You said you like something, so and now you're going to pay a price for it. Right, now so you're going to pay a steep price for it.
We got to get this straight. So, you know, there just can't be any Punisher comics ever? Because crazy people are going to be assholes and
I'm sorry,
be the worst.
My Punisher is Joe Tower or whatever his name was.
Joe Tower?
Yeah, the blonde guy.
Yeah, the blonde guy. The blonde guy that David Propose wrote.
I don't think it was Joe Tower, but it
wasn't Joe Tower. Yeah. Definitely Joe something.
Are you sure? I think it was Joe
Tower. Let me say,
Fortress.
Yeah,
there we go.
I was thinking about this while reading this, because the most recent version of the Punisher was him being the tool of the hand, and he was like juiced up, hell powered. It felt very superhero. It felt very like it felt nice. Honestly, it was a refreshing idea for the Punisher, mm-hmm. and he brought his wife back to life, and that was a nice twist on all of it. Seeing him back where he's just like, I killed a bunch of people, I was like, I don't know if I'm ready for this. I liked another angle on it, and we do get another angle here, It's just too close to regular Punisher, I think, for my sensibilities right now.
Okay.
Pete, that's why I'm curious about your sensibilities.
Well, this was a kind of an interesting take on Punisher here, because it starts with Punisher shooting a bunch of kind of like cops and, you know, just kind of people, regular people doing their bad. And Kingpin is the one who's kind of like the Punisher.
Oh, wait, hold on. I just want to mention right off, spoilers for this book and every book in the stack. Take it away, Pete.
Okay, yep. That's a good point. But Kingpin is kind of being the Punisher of this comic book a little bit. Like, he is...
He's nasty.
He's kind of getting his own justice and taking out bad guys. So it's a really weird kind of start, or an interesting idea of, like, what if Kingpin was the one who's kind of doing vigilante kind of justice, and Punisher is just I don't know. But
he does just shoot. He shoots his guns a lot.
Yeah, he definitely does. But it felt reversed to me. So I thought, like, okay, this is kind of a different take, a little different feel to it. And also, we get a lot of the old JT's head hump in here, where we really get inside Punisher's head and kind of get to hear his inner voice. And that's always tough for me, because it's like, you know, sometimes different writers have different kind of voices on different characters. So I felt like I really wasn't sure, you know, which it didn't feel a little bit off to me on the Punisher's inner voice. So
we do get literally inside his head at the end of the issue, when we find out that someone is maybe in control of our guy, Frank.
Yeah, then that's kind of the interesting reveal at the end there, where it's like he's bugged, he's chipped, he's been chipped, doesn't seem like a smart idea, because it's like, dude, if the Punisher finds out you chipped him and controlling him, he's going to be pretty pissed about that.
Do you think microchipped him?
Ooh, that's too on the nose. You know what I mean?
Now, he's really good with those microchips. Very tight.
Honestly, I love the idea of seeing the Punisher as some sort of, like, partially electronic, partially electric lumbering monster, if you will. And I'm excited to see if they take it even further in this run. Right, Pete?
Well, you are more of a Franken Punisher?
We're edging.
That's a really interesting idea. That would be great.
We're edging that. Awful. But let me throw out there. You can go ahead.
I was just going to say, I've been very mean to Pete for the past 5+ minutes or so. I do apologize, Pete. But
for the first time ever,
in all honesty, it is, I do think, upsetting that the backstory here feels like, well, enough time has passed that everybody's forgotten about that little Punisher controversy we have. Let's just bring back Frank Castle and the Skull and all, and just go kind of forward from there. So I don't like that. I mean, I don't know what the discussions are. I was not in the office or anything like that, but I don't like the outside story of what I am intuiting is going on here. However, just based purely on this comic, Benjamin Percy certainly knows how to write this sort of thing well. The Kingpin stuff, I think, is really interesting, Pete, the way that he's coming at it and contrasted with the Punisher. And Julius Ota knows how to write bloody, violent action scenes, so that certainly comes to bear as well.
Well, and I think we get, like we're saying, the Kingpin is very violent, so is Tombstone in this.
Oh,
so I think
we're setting great up the Tombstone villains, in this, man.
We're setting up the villains to be very bad. So I do think that helps the Punisher make a little bit more sense as the protagonist here. And he's definitely out of sorts. He goes to a kindly old woman's house that he washes up in front of.
Which is super important. You got to know which kindly old woman's house to knock on. You know what I mean? Because that could go either way.
And she has a kindly old woman-sized bathtub, and we get the Punisher's big ass crawling into that tub, which I thought was a funny shot.
Yeah, you love.
He really crawls into it, and I couldn't tell if he was like scarred or hairy or just sort of dirty. He looks a little bit like Pigpen. He looks like Pigpen when he's crawling. He's got dirt lines.
Okay, so I want to get back to something that Alex talked about. So you think that slapping Red Band on it doesn't make everything like, hey, it's not the Punisher, this is Red Band, so this is cool, like, don't anybody come after us for...
Yeah, for sure. I think, like, you could do that with anything in society. And I'll list a couple of things that you can slap Red Band on right now that'll make them 100% okay. Starting with... just kidding. I will laud...
walked us down the plank.
Not
there.
To take was, Pete's side on it, Alex, but it is Red Band. Technically, that's for adults, so adults a little more able to make that
are
decision.
They?
And the
are
larger,
they?
Well, technically, I said technically.
Sure. You said technically.
I will laud this as I think the first Red Band title I've read from Marvel that actually maybe deserves the Red Band
yes.
labeling. Like most, we've talked about this a lot, but I feel like they're like, it's a Red Band. There's some red ink in there. And that's pretty much it. This is gross. Tombstone is just like taking piles of body parts and shoving them through meat grinders and things.
The deaths here are legitimately upsetting. So yes. that's they did it. They did the job.
They did.
And a lot of people have been writing in, like, how does Tombstone get rid of a lot of bodies at once? And they're finally answering that. So it's nice they're listening to the fan mail. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What do you want on your tombstone? That's what I've been asking. And we get the answer in this.
Man,
part.
I love when
a
you
little
go to
pancreas.
That joke. Man, you never get tired of that joke.
Well, what about the jokes in Powers 25, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Brian Michael Bendis, art by Michael Avon Oeming. This is a continuation, per the name, 25 years later for the 25th anniversary of the series about a special unit of cops in a city and world where superpowers exist. It's something that really put Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Avon Oeming on the map, and now they're returning here. We get to see a continuation of the story. Dina Pilgrim, one of the two main characters that kicked off, is in it. John Walker. Is that the character?
Johnny Walker Black?
No. Nope,
Johnny Walker
whatever.
Blue?
Anyway, the other main character, spoilers for something that happened like 20, 25 years ago, is still dead, and they're still paying tribute to his memory. But there's some new mysteries going on and other things. I gotta say, I loved this. I thought, like, what I really loved about this is not just Brian Michael Bendis not missing a beat from how he wrote Powers previously, but like we talked about a couple of times, I think, and this is nothing against Bendis, but Michael Avon Oeming has really evolved his style over the years and clarified it in a way. And that really comes through that in this issue as well. It's a gorgeous looking book. I was very impressed. I was very happy to see this back.
Yeah, I agree. I like this a lot. I believe his name is Christian Walker, I want to say.
Christian Walker, yes.
But I agree with you. This really steps forward a lot. It feels like very actively stepping forward. We get Dina Pilgrim is like crotchety and like it's appropriately timed and appropriately moved forward. And, you know, this is an idea that has been used a ton since Powers came out. And it's nice that they were able to find sort of the alleys to make this feel fresh. And what a flex to draw themselves on the opening page of the comic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I was very excited to have this back. It was just, it felt so right. And it's nice to be kind of back in this world. And it felt, you know, sometimes when you go back to something or it feels different or they feel like they got to make it different, but really just felt like kind of slipping back into your favorite pair of jeans or something. And it was just like, oh, man, I love this. This is so nice. Why do we ever stop this? So, yeah, this is great. Such a great team and such good hands. And I feel like they did such a great job of starting to tell the story that really works.
And let me say, I also love slipping into Pete's favorite jeans.
Sneaking
into his house. Yeah. We share them. It's like a sister of the traveling pants, but we steal Pete's pants and mail them. Alex and I mail them back and forth. And we wear them to do this show.
Then. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm wearing Pete's jeans now, and then Alex
and
will wear them next
amazing.
Week.
You look amazing. Oh,
thank you. Thank you. It's really nice. Pete?
Let's turn and talk about the book that gave me nightmares, Absolute Batman number 12 from DC Comics, written by Scott Snyder, art by Nick Jurgoda. Now, there was a lot of confusion about the last issue, which essentially presented a nightmare scenario about Bane breaking Batman. None of that was real. That was all Alfred narrating or writing a letter to Batman. Or probably based on what happened this issue, talking to him for the 20 days that he's been unconscious. But instead, we were left off with the cliffhanger of Bane getting ready to attack. Three of Batman's friends, who we know in the regular world, are villains, specifically Oswald Cobblepot, Harvey Dent, and Edward Nygma. And that's where we pick up this issue, first with Killer Croc. And then we get to see how Bane broke each of them individually and basically created three Gotham City villains all in one issue. And specifically the panel, and this is not a joke, specifically the panel Nick Dragotta drew of the Penguin's broken body.
Oh,
I read this book and I had a nightmare about it later on that night. That's really stuck with me, really upsetting and affecting. This is a horror book. It really is.
Yeah.
This issue specifically, yes.
Yeah.
I just want to comment real quick about the cover. This is such a badass cover that gets me so excited to read the comic. I just wanted to comment how fantastic.
No, keep, you can talk about more stuff.
But yeah,
Book, Pete.
Excited to read this book. This is crazy. We get a bunch of flashbacks. The Croc stuff is heartbreaking. That whole thing of like he's basically begging to die and Batman won't do it.
I ask real quick, if you got turned into a giant crocodile, would you want us to kill you or would you be like happy about that?
No, dude, I'd be so happy. I could fucking live in the sewers and hang out with the turtles. Are you kidding me? Come on, bro.
I think crocodiles are famously not friends with turtles.
Well, I would be friends with all of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You know what I mean? Especially Michelangelo.
You can go down to the sewer right now.
Yeah, Pete. Let's remember something we maybe haven't talked about for a while, but Pete used to walk to Comic Book Club and step over green puddles on the streets of New York and want to drink them.
Well, you know, I mean,
on the off chance that it was ooze.
Yeah,
this is an adult man.
It's an adult man. I like that. Yeah, but fun last panel reveal. But man, this just continues to be such over the top fun. It's a blast. It's just action packed. It tears at you. It freaks you out. It's absolutely fantastic Batman lore and comics, and I'm having such a blast with this, and I'm sorry about your nightmare, Alex.
No, I'm happy you had a nightmare. That's called the comics reaching into real life and fucking it up in a great way. We've talked a lot about, like, the Absolute Comics go hard, and this comic goes so hard. This could have been, like, 30 issues of a normal comic where it's, like, slowly spooling out his friends turning into villains, which is a great conceit. They all know Bruce Wayne is Batman. They've all been sort of supporting him and being his sounding board as he's doing this, and they paid the most extreme price for it. Killer Croc's the most upset. He's probably got it off the best. He's, like, living. He's out there. He's still eating. The Penguin is goo.
It was horrifying.
The description of it was – the image is horrifying. The description of it was horrifying. And, like, now when people call him the Penguin, it's fucked up.
Dude.
It's fun. Like, but in the past, it's been like, yeah, no, he's mean. He looks vaguely like a penguin.
Yeah.
This guy is going to be a shambling penguin, and he's gonna, like, that's how his body is healing. And wow, it just makes this much worse, because the friendship with Bruce Wayne made it better earlier on for their lives and Batman's life, and now it makes everything so much harder and worse. I love the Two-Face stuff was good, diabolical.
Oh, dude, yeah.
The Riddler stuff was, again, like sci-fi body horror from a whole nother angle, which I thought was well done and scary.
Dude,
and then the reveal,
eyes, that whole eyes thing, dude. Oh my God,
it's great. And then the reveal at the end, exciting. It's sort of like maybe it's not all bad news for our guy Batman.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they might beat this Bane guy, but the one last thing that I'll say that I really love about this take on Bane is when Bane was first introduced, it was mostly like, I will break the Batman by literally breaking him. The end. That is my goal. I'm good. But here, I love this idea of Bane being like, I'm going to break you down to your component parts and make you into something that I think is better and more true to yourself. That's exactly what he's been doing to Bruce Wayne. That's what he does to these three people. Edward is the only one who is driven so insane by having his brain bashed into his skull that he's like, this is great. I love having tubes into my exposed brain. So cool. But like you said, Justin, it's something that, like, this title, for all of its crazy action, has been very slow and methodical. To jam all of this into this issue, you feel like Bruce Wayne. You're like, this is too much. I cannot deal with all of this.
Plus, Bruce is being overwhelmed by all the venom in his bloodstream from what happened to him. So let's not forget that. Bane is making him into himself, in his image. And it's working, but I think Bane's going to be happily creating his nemesis now. And what the question is, will Bruce come out of this at any way positive? what could possibly be good about this?
I just want to, and that's exciting that anything could happen here. We don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And I just want to circle back to the Nick Drogoda art on all of the character stuff is just so, so fucking epic. I mean, this is just unbelievable art. It's nightmarish.
Yeah. I had a beautiful dream about the Penguin.
Oh, really?
Woke up smiling. Wow. Felt good for the first time in a long time.
Why don't we move on and talk about Transformers number 24 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Daniel Warren Johnson, art by Jorge Corona. The big deal here, other than Megatron and Optimus Prime throwing down in Chicago, poorly timed that, just want to throw that out there, is
come on, bro.
I mean, it is. I don't know. I was thinking about it while I was reading the issue, but anyway, this is Danny Warren Johnson's final issue on Transformers. Robert Kirkman is taking over starting next issue with Dan Mora. So that's a powerhouse team. I also want to say, for full transparency, Skybound sent over the issue, which is very nice to give us an advanced chance to read it. They redacted the last 5 to 6 pages. So whatever happens there, probably Optimus Prime dying, because I can't imagine what other big spoiler they'd be hiding. Don't. It's all right. He comes back as Rodimus Prime or whatever, right? Doesn't he? Isn't that what happens?
Jesus Christ, dude.
It's 12. It's the second half of the issue. So, and the first half ain't no whistling Dixie. Yeah. It's not fun. Yeah.
Break it down, please. First off, this is a phenomenal issue. Crazy cover. I mean, that cover just gets me very excited, but also makes me very nervous because I'm like, wait a second. Are they spoiling something? Or is this not what happens? And this is a fucking misdirect. And my heart skipped a beat. But when you talk about skipping a beat, there is a panel in here that literally made me jump out of my seat screaming, oh, shit, because I was just so blown away by how badass it is. So as we see in the cover here, there's an epic battle between Megatron and Optimus Prime. And there is one panel where Optimus is running at Megatron, and then the next panel is Megatron getting hit by a fucking truck. Optimus transformed into a truck and then nailed. I just was like, holy shit, that is so badass. It was one of the greatest panels I've ever seen. Daniel Warren Johnson. But the high to low, I was having such a great time on that panel being like, you fucking suck at Megatron. Yeah, he fucking trucked you. And then the next fucking couple of panels, Optimus gets fucking thrown. And then, the impaling. But man, what an emotional roller coaster. And then I can't believe I was like, really? You give us an advanced review, but then redact the final pages? So I have no fucking idea. So I don't know. I don't know what the fuck happened. So how am I supposed to comment on the last issue?
You're
going to
pick it up. I have a feeling you're going to pick it up. I just found that moment with Optimus and transformed into the big rig.
Yeah.
We in the background is written the ki-ku-ka-ku-ka-ki sound effects, the transforming noises, which I thought was really cool. But having said that, I feel like this comic has been in a smash Optimus rut for 10 issues, and I was just very surprised. And obviously, I don't know what happens in the second half. But if it's just him getting smashed more and killed, I'm like, what was the point of this? This feels like, because it's in this issue, there's he's about to kill. It's the same I'm going to kill these humans unless you tell me not to. And then a bunch of humans die. And I was like, I feel like this is we've had this type of story for so much of the series. And I don't I don't know. I guess I wanted a little bit more something.
What if, just to throw it out there, what if the second half of the issue is Megatron convincing Optimus Prime to eat a human? And then he's well, I haven't tried that. And then it's just him like chomping down on Spike, and then he's eating, running a bunch of Chicago people through the garden, if you know what I mean. And
like just running through the garden, dude. There's nothing like.
That's the thing about Autobots is they can't say no to a dare.
100%.
Yeah, not in their program.
Especially if you hot dog dare someone.
I like the first half of this issue maybe a little better than you, Justin, just because I think like this is leading to something. What it is leading up to, we don't necessarily know. But it felt more pressing in this issue than it has for a while there. And I know you and I have been, Justin and I have been more down on the Transformers run, even though we like DWJ. But, you know, I hope it sticks the landing. We'll certainly, I think, come back and talk about it more once we've actually read the whole thing.
Yeah, and the, you know, the stuff that we did get to see, you know, like the Omega Supreme kind of flyby there was such an epic moment, too. I love Daniel Warren Johnson's love of the Transformers and really kind of comes through in his storytelling. And he makes things really feel as epic as it did when you were a kid. So it's just in such great hands. I can't wait to read the actual ending of this.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou. forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Undead Iron Fist, number one from Marvel, written by Jason Liu, art by Fran Gallant. This is following up on something that you might have missed. It is 60th anniversary special, I want to say, where Danny Rand died. But now we're following him not just fighting his way out of hell, but afterwards in this cool new costume from the cover where his face is covered. So maybe it's not Danny Rand, given a revelation that happens towards the end of the book. But, you know, there's a dragon in hell, some other stuff going on. I will say one thing that was pretty funny to me was Jason Liu in the press release announcing this was he's like, yep, Danny Rand is back. You know, I was pretty surprised because we thought there was going to be a lot of outcry when we killed him off in the anniversary special. But people, we didn't really hear much about it at all. I was like, oh, maybe that should tell you something about it.
Yeah, yeah, the white guy who is the Iron Fist died. Nobody's really mad about that. You know?
But that all said, he is back. What did you think about this first issue here?
Well, you know, people love a loose mask, and they're so popular right now, so it's nice to see them on trend here. There's a lot going on in the cover, but we kind of really get into it. I love the way this started. You get a little Luke Cage who's sad, and then gives you the sweet Christmas, so, you know, hope is born again. And, you know, I love the dragon fight in hell. I thought that was really cool. I feel like this is in good hands. It's great art. You know, it's almost a cartoonish feel, which adds a lightness to what's happening, which is good. You know, you don't want to take yourself too seriously. So I feel like it's in good hands. I'm excited to see what happens moving forward. Or sorry, I mispronounced that. I meant to say Wobbies.
Nice. Thank you for the correction. I also like this. Like, we get the move, the naming the moves, very Iron Fist thing going all the way back to the Matt Fraction days on that. We get some Spider-Man guest star known as Brooklyn Spider-Man, which I think is a funny idea that they know which boroughs the Spider-Men are from. and I also really liked this is something now seeing this. I want to give this a shot. When I die, I'm going to pay someone to dig up my grave. Oh. And so that when you guys go visit
some footprints
it,
going away.
Exactly. What a fun prank.
Well, it gives you hope, which is nice. You know what I mean?
That's what I want. That's what I want you guys to be like. He's still out there.
He's still out
and
there.
And he has to show up Tuesday at 7 for the podcast.
All right, why don't we move on to talk about Red Hood, number one, from DC Comics, written by Gretchen Felker Martin, art by Jeff Spokes. This is another adult series, Black Label, but it is in continuity. It follows up on the Hush 2 storyline, which is still about 2 to 3 parts from finishing up. Going to come out at some point, but seems like Red Hood has headed to the DC Universe version of New Orleans in this book, tracking down a mystery and teaming up with Huntress a little bit. Justin, if you love this, take it away.
I love the New Angelique, I think it's called, which is the New Orleans. Very cool. Fun. Really into the environment around Red Hood. It's like high. Really, they do a lot of great work making it feel like what a what New Orleans feels like. So I thought that was cool. I like Jason out here. I like that he is pretty rough and tumble. He makes mistakes. I like Huntress showing up. This mystery is actually pretty great, too. I like it. The cops are being sort of, they're like somehow being programmed or something's happening with them. I think we're going to find a backstory of something that they did before. And they are being turned into weapons to go hurt and kill people. So cool storyline. I thought the art was really has a nice grit to it, which matches the character and the environment. This was a pleasant surprise, I found.
Yeah, I agree. I think they did a good job of giving us the first issue, get us excited about some stuff. And, you know, a lot of people worry that if you talk on cell phones too long, you're going to grow another eye pupil. And this comic just really kind of proves that point with that scary last panel. So will it improve vision or will it hurt it? Time will tell, but you know,
more eyes, better vision, I think.
Oh, interesting. So pupe it up is what team you're on.
Pupe it up.
My one quibble with the book is I generally like Jeff Spokes' art. I thought the paneling was really tight on this for some reason, like a lot of thin, full page, four panels a page. So everybody just felt like very cramped in it. I don't know if that's purposeful, if we're supposed to be getting something out of there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a city. Things are crammed in.
I know, but it was hard to see what was going on because of it. That's all.
It felt like a choice for the action sequences to me. It didn't bother me. I hear what you're saying, but I thought it made it, it gave it almost like a flip book style to it. So the action, I thought it flowed a bit.
Is it a fold-in? Justin, do you think it's a fold-in?
Justin I fold
all my comics.
He loves twight shirts. He loves twight comics. He's all about it, man.
If it's not popping buttons off, what's it doing?
Yeah, what are we doing?
Racer X, number one from Mad Cave Studios, written by Mark Russell, art by Nuno Plati. This is following the older brother of Speed Racer, who is sucked into a criminal underworld of racing, ends up horribly scarred, and comes back as the mysterious Racer X to help his brother. Here's the thing, though. You don't actually need to know anything about Speed Racer, the ongoing Speed Racer title, the mythology or whatever to get into this, because I found this a very involving and very serious book from Mark Russell. Like, it's more in line with the stuff that he did in Gotham, the Dark Age, and Superman, the Rocket Age. I don't remember what that one was called.
Space Age.
There we go. Yes. Which were also like, same sort of thing where it's mostly narration, mostly kind of like looking back at, well, this happened and that led to this thing. But I thought this was really good.
Yeah, same. I thought that it was so engrossing, and it's especially successful when I'm like the name of the race car driving family is Racer and their kid is named Speed Racer. His name is Speed and Racer X's name is Rex. I was like, this is
yeah, and they haven't figured out that Driver X is the mysterious Racer X. What's going on here?
I was going to say, yeah, he crosses the mob, and they're like, how are we going to get him? I'm like, he's right there using his name, racing publicly.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess probably the point you're making is, like, all of this stuff is janky and very old school, but it 100% works in a very realistic way because Mark Russell totally grounds it in the emotion of the character.
Yeah, Justin, you can't, like, show up at somebody's house and be like, hey, listen, someone murdered somebody down the street. Is there someone named Murderer here? Like, you can't just do stuff like that.
This book would argue that you can do that.
It's a fun argument. I think Racer...
Hey, I'm going over to Dan Murder's house for the night.
Oh, no. I think that
actually they would be more like local murder or like neighborhood murder. I'm gonna go Florida play man? In his house for a while.
Florida man. Yeah. I Racer X is a kind of a classic villain. I feel like a great villain. So this is a cool idea, and I think it's well executed. I also think it's kind of funny that he wears his mask to go get coffee, but whatever, you know, you gotta commit to your mask. But I also thought the kind of like, you know, the cool move of the money first thing was a lot of fun. So I feel like this
great
is
great details.
Yeah, this is cool. This is what you want from this. I feel like they did a good job of like setting up and delivering on this. And yeah, I agree with the Zelbatron. If you don't know anything about Speed Racer or anything, you can still jump on and have a great time with this.
Yeah, there's one line I want to highlight real quick that Rex is narrating his. The way he split from his family. I would give what I would give to turn back time and listen to Pops. But reverse only exists in cars.
I don't know how true that is.
Have you ever gone backwards any other way, Alex?
I don't know. VCR.
Walked backwards?
Walked backwards, yeah.
VCR, interesting answer. You're talking about rewind.
Yeah. He's like, Pete is more active than I am.
He goes,
Pete walks everywhere backwards. I can tell because the jeans I'm wearing are all messed up in the butt because he walks backwards all the time.
That's my nickname in college, messed up in the butt.
Court, Children of the Round Table, number one from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Daniel DiNicolo. This is a team that's worked together before on a bunch of all-ages titles, and now they're back together in the DC Universe with an original property, which you can probably figure it out from the title, but it's about a bunch of kids who get the powers and weapons of the Knights of the Round Table, but also it seems like the spirits of the Knights of the Round Table are in those weapons. This is very much a setup issue where we get to meet the characters of the situation, but I really enjoyed this. I'm very happy they're doing something original in the DC Universe that's not like, we're tied to Superman, we're tied to Wonder Woman. It's just kind of its own thing, and this is fun. It's a good team.
Yeah, I agree. It's a fun all-ages book. Cool quest. Love the art style. It's got a cool like anime feel to it, which I really like. A lot of bright colors. Fun group of kids. Cool idea. Well executed.
Tom Taylor's just great at taking an idea and giving us like fun but simple and clean executions on it. Like fun group of kids. Everyone's distinct. They get these weapons from a meteor, and then the weapons have the personalities of the knights in them. It's just a great premise. It's just like right there. You get it right away, and now we're off to the races. I'm reading a book about the Knights of the Round Table, the Bright Sword. So this was really hitting
when I was reading it.
I was like, oh, I know all these names.
Do they also have a meteor of weapons in Bright Sword?
Yeah, I'm reading a book just like this. It's called Court, Children of the Round Table, number one.
I love a good meteor full of weapons.
By the way, the other book that they wrote together, because I was trying to remember this live show, Seven Secrets, which was also good from Boom Studios. Very fun series. Check that out if you're looking to read something between the first issue and the second issue of that. X-Men of Apocalypse Alpha, number one from Marvel, written by Jeff Loeb, art by Simone DeMeo. This is technically its own issue, but really it's a kickoff of a six-part miniseries, bringing Jeff Loeb back to the Age of Apocalypse X-Men and bring the Age of Apocalypse X-Men to the Marvel 616, the main universe, for reasons that become apparent over the course of this issue. Justin, this is very much your sort of thing.
JT Sizz. Come on.
I like this universe. I like this issue. I like the characters that are coming. When Morph shows up, I'm like, this guy's fun. Remember how fun he was? And it was great to see him, especially in the back cover of the Bleak Universe. I love the Rogue Gambit stuff was really working here. And it struck me while I was reading this, Pete, this should be your favorite shit in the world. Here's why. Professor X in Age of Apocalypse, dead. Cyclops, bad guy. You got your X-Men are just popping off. You got Sabretooth in there.
Well,
Wolverine's sort of a bummer, but he's not even around. So that's okay.
Yeah, but this is like good guy Creed, which drives me nuts. But I have
questions.
Yeah, that's
you have five questions?
No, I have questions.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
How many? Can you tell us
I'll count them. I'll count them. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. Great. So am I missing something? So we got this last panel reveal, right? Nate Gray. I mean, it's a big reveal that Jean Grey had a kid. Am I missing something that I don't know, you know, who?
This is a great question. No, this is a character named X-Man.
I do want to point out that was five questions.
That's amazing. And not a chance to answer a single one of them till the end.
Well, I got more.
Oh, okay.
Five more, you think?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm not going
to. The best way to get an answer is to just stack them.
Yeah.
This is Nate Gray, who is originally we first meet him in Age of Apocalypse, but there's a version of him who's in the regular X-Men universe and has done some cool stuff. He is the
he left over from Age of Apocalypse though? Wasn't that the whole thing?
Exactly. Okay. He came over. That's why I said he's from Age of Apocalypse.
So you really got to freshly finish Age of Apocalypse because it's been some years and it was like Nate Gray. I was like, oh fuck, I'm missing why this is important.
No, I mean, he is like basically Cable if he hadn't been infected with a techno-organic virus back in Executioner's Song, because in Age of Apocalypse there wasn't that, so he was just out there. His mother is Madeline Pryor, father Cyclops. He has massive psionic powers. He's one of my favorite characters. His series that was his standalone series that ran for, I want to say, 60, 80 issues was great. I loved it. It was super unique and weird in the X-Men universe. And that was around the time when, like, Jeff Loeb was doing X-Force and that sort of weird, the books were just all sort of going all in their own directions. I was super psyched to see him here, and I do want him back. We were speculating, I can't remember if it was on here or in our Patreon Discord, that X-Man is the mutant X trapped in Gray Malkin in the main continuity. I don't know if seeing him maybe puts that to rest, but I was excited about that as well. Yeah.
Jeff Loeb is usually pretty good at paying attention to what's going on in the other comic books and making sure his
famously
is very much in line. So, yes.
Yeah.
So the other question.
Oh, more questions. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So we get some.
I think I held up my end by answering that one like almost too long, right? Like I gave you too much.
That was good. I really liked that.
Hopefully I helped the audience listening too. Or maybe they're just like, Pete, you're dumb as shit, dude. How did you not remember any of that?
I'm going to say 50-50, but go ahead.
Probably.
That's the fan base.
That's good. Yeah, I either drive people nuts or they're like, oh, thank you. We get a couple Remy's here. We get a couple of Gambits. Did I miss something where we get two Gambits?
There's just one. No,
there's a darker Gambit, and then there's...
Yeah, goes through a costume change. There's literally a line where they're like, wow, I like the new costume.
Okay, all right. I missed that. Okay.
Yeah, the interesting thing is comics are a synthesis of arts and words. There are words as well. Have you been reading that part?
Reading is tough. It always is my least favorite part of the comic.
And not to dwell on it, but you change your clothes.
Yeah. Yeah, there every Tuesday.
That's where I get your pants. But I do think that's something you can recognize. Doesn't that bring you closer to Gambit to find out that he also changes his clothes?
Yeah, I can have something that we have in common.
You have something in common with Remy LeBeau.
I was all right with this. I think, you know, Jeff Loeb has had a mixed bag a little bit with some of his nostalgia plays. This is just based on this first issue, maybe the most successful one of those so far, because it does, like you're saying, Justin, really capture that vibe from Age of Apocalypse. I also, to get like a little deeper into spoilers about this, like the idea that they've been convinced that the main timeline is the wrong timeline. And the Age of Apocalypse timeline is the one they stuck around because they're supposed to stick around. They're the real timeline. So it becomes them sort of attacking the main timeline. That's interesting. I think they'll figure out pretty quickly that's not quite on the level. But I like that. That's a strong concept to start off here versus, well, there's a portal open. Let's see what happens at the end, which is what I thought this was going to be.
Yeah, it's like an incursion type thing. And honestly, this team is set up to be an Exiles team.
In the 100%.
So that's cool. Another book that I really liked that was around that age, because Blink, I believe, is also a character that originated in Age of Apocalypse and came over. So great to – this is an untapped source of fun X-Men stuff at a time when some of the X-Men books aren't as fun as we want them to be.
Well, why don't we find out if our next book is fun? The Blue Falcon and Dino-Mutt, number one from Dynamite. Written by Jimmy Palmiotti, art by Pasquale Qualano. And this is a update of the classic cartoon property about a superhero and his dog chum that ends, of course, with the dog getting murdered and the guy, the shit beaten out of him. Yeah, just like they did in the Hanna-Barbera cartoons.
Yeah, it's basically what if Blue Falcon meets John Wick, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where it's just like, don't murder my dog, I'm going to go on a killing spree.
Well, but I think he's going to... You think once Dino-Mutt gets robotized, he's going to be, like, goofy and fun?
Like, Pete? Was that a question for Pete?
I don't know.
That's just a question. I talked to both of you on this podcast. Great.
I don't know.
Honestly, I just ask questions sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know my answer.
It seems darker. It seems like we're getting a darker version of the thing that we're used to, is my point with this, where it's a little grittier. There's... A little extra care taken in the violence.
And I will say, it got me. The dog being killed was deeply upsetting.
Yeah,
so shouts
this,
to
this
you.
This across the board. That was my main thing. Like, I know what they're going for here, but just the whole idea of making it John Wick, but with these Hanna-Barbera properties, I don't feel any preciousness about Blue Falcon and Dino-Mutt. But there was definitely, and I like Jimmy Palmiotti, but there was a point where I was like, this is a bit much. Maybe we could, like, pull back 10%. That's all.
No, it goes hard. But you don't like the Blue Falcon and Dynamite? USA Cartoon Express, this was a banger.
Yeah, come on.
Not my thing, man.
I'm excited this is back.
This versus Grape Ape? Yeah, I'm hoping for Blue Falcon.
Ooh. Dude, what about the Hair Bear Bunch, bro? Come on.
They never made any sense.
Ah, dude, I love that show.
Tell me the plot of a Hair Bear Bunch cartoon.
Well, the zookeeper would be like, hey, listen, you guys got to stay in your, you know.
They were like, no, we're driving our little car around. Yeah. And then they would leave, and that's all I remember happening. They were always let's drive in our little car.
Mr. Peebly. Oh, man. The invisible motorcycle, bro. Come on.
Yeah, that's, I don't know.
Boy, I wish I understood any of this.
Okay, well, anyways.
That's when you could be fucked up at work and be a well-paid cartoon animator. Because there's no way they were like, this makes the most sense.
Anyways, I liked Blue Falcon back in the day. I'm excited we're getting more Blue Falcon. I like the team, but I agree with the Zelbatron. I wasn't ready for this over-the-top violence, which I'm cool with. I just took a little bit to get used to this here. But yeah, I think they do a good job of setting things up. And people got to learn, man, if you murder a loved one, even if that's a loved one is a pet, there's going to be, that's almost like worse. You know what I mean? It's really going to set somebody off.
Worse than murdering a human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. And you work as a judge, I believe. Is that?
Yeah.
Great.
Small.
That's why I've
judge.
Avoided hanging out with Christy Dog Murder.
Trinity, Daughter of Wonder Woman, number 4 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Belen Ortega. In this issue, the youngest version of Trinity travels back to the Bat-Cat wedding to get a Damian Wayne that's been changed into a corgi. This is very much Tom King poking the bear here by returning to one of his most controversial storylines. But given all that, what do you guys think about this issue? I think we've generally been very positive about this title. How did it hold up given the controversial nature of what happened with Batman and Catwoman, as well as we talk about in this issue, with Alfred immediately afterwards?
Oh, man, Jesus.
Yeah, is that a lot for you to handle, Pete, and find joy here?
I did. Alfred has to deal with a lot in this issue, but I was just happy to see him always. And that corgi is trashing the place. And then once you add Ace, oh, man, Bruce is going to freak out.
Bruce really does freak out in this comic in a,
Bridezilla kind of way.
Bridezilla, yes, and Dave from Alvin and the Chipmunks. He's constantly yelling, Alfred! Which I thought was, sort of a strange Bruce Wayne take, I thought. But I really loved, there were great moments in this when they're all
fun.
Laughing at the Big Penny. Seeing Alfred just...
Penny.
Alfred is just Pennyworthing it up in this heavy butler energy throughout this whole... That guy can't stop parenting.
It was a little bit like, because the fun would stop and then it would be like, oh, we're at the wedding. And then I'm like, oh, fuck, this is crazy. And then it kind of went right back into the madness. But I was like, man, they're really playing with our emotions there.
Well, but that's been true every issue. I'm forgetting one of them, but the first one was Crisis on Infinite Earths, which was like the death of thousands of worlds. We went to Steve Trevor and bonding with him before he died when he had sort of just first met Wonder Woman. And now we're getting the Bat-Cat wedding. So I don't know what the eventual thing that's going to come out of this is, but it really is like bring these trinities in to see hope and a brighter side. Oh, the other one was Jason Todd. Like, they saw Jason Todd right before he died. So maybe there is a pattern there that they're going to realize, but I think it's more just, like, bringing these moments of hope and joy before some of the most traumatic events in the DC Universe, which is really cool. And the whole runner of Alfred talking or recounting his story to Steve Trevor, I thought was really lovely, the thread throughout that.
Yeah, it's sort of nice, and like it's funny in such a bright issue. We have this like man going to hell essentially, or in the afterlife basically. Yeah. Like,
and why do you think Alfred is being sent to hell? Is it all the sandwiches, or some other reason?
The soup was not hot enough as requested.
It was a cold
goodbye.
Soup.
I will ask you guys about one joke that I spent too much time and just like stopped me, and I spent too much time thinking about is. So Damian Wayne's a corgi.
Right.
He poops on the floor and Bruce Wayne steps in the poop. So he technically like stepped in his son's poop, which makes it like extra gross to me. Like it's not just a random dog's poop. Like his son pooped on the floor and he stepped in.
It's a dog. It's no.
But it's a dog who is his son.
Oh, I think it's more acceptable to step in a family member's poop than strange poop.
But the dog is part of the family. It's not just because he's not a human.
That dog's not. That's just a random corgi to him. You're saying that dog poop? Do you think he's been eating like Damien food?
Probably Damien Chow.
Yeah.
League of Chow Assassins.
I think it's. You know, like when you have kids, you change their diaper a lot, and so occasionally you end up touching that poop. So yeah, like. Probably.
Kibble Al Ghul. You know, I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out here. Anyway, yeah. Imperial War Nova Centurion, number one for Marvel, written by Jed McKay and Jonathan Hickman, art by Matteo Della Fonte. This is another one-shot tying in to the Imperial event that is also teeing up its upcoming series, a Nova-focused series. But here we're getting a lot of fill-in. We got to see Nova put on the World Mind helmet and then figure out that it was the Inhumans behind everything over in Imperial. Here we get to see how he figured that out, kind of, with the help of the World Mind. And then we zoom ahead a little bit to see what the Inhumans are doing next. I know we've been a little back and forth on these one-shots, so where does this one fit in?
I like this one. I really like Nova as a character. The World Mind stuff feels a little overly complicated. That's not this book's fault. I just feel like in general it is. I think Nova can do that stuff, but also he could just go fly around space and do stuff, and that would be cool too. But I, in general, like this. I like what Nova's being positioned as, like they do in Green Lantern often, where for some reason the rest of them are dead or not Green Lanterns, and you only have one or a couple. So, like, the idea that he maybe has to build up the Nova Corps or some version of that, I think, is cool. Looking forward to the solo book.
Yeah, I mean, of course, Justin liked this one because they got a lot of brain humping in this. You really get inside the mind here, and we get the World Mind, but then turns into the evil Nova floating head mind, and then we get inside the mind, and that's where the real brain battles begin. But fun last panel, even though we've kind of already seen the kind of the family before, so. But still badass last panel, so excited for that.
You know, I love getting inside characters' heads, Pete, but do you ever think that you're always inside your own head?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's scary in here. You know, I need to get out of it more.
Yeah.
Well, you probably need The Toxic Crusaders, number one from Ahoy Comics, written by Matt Boers, art by Tristan Wright. This is in the current continuity of the Toxic Avenger comics from Ahoy, but it also riffs off yet another classic cartoon series, in this case, The Toxic Crusaders. We're getting a whole team of toxic monsters fighting toxic villains. What'd you guys think of this one?
Yeah, this is gross fun. The stuff where you kind of have the Toxic Avenger here, and then you get like the fun Big Nose and Mushroom Lady team up, and they start kind of fucking shit up here. But then at the end, they gotta help clean up, which is a fun twist. Yeah, I love the art style of this. It's light but also gross. I think it balances in a nice way where it's not too bad. Yeah, this is a solid first issue.
This had like fucked up 70s Captain Planet and the Planeteers energy to me.
Ooh, interesting.
And this is nice. I liked it. I like the absolute randomness of these characters and the way that their powers work, how everything happens in this comic is wild. But they move through it just confidently and with like, this is cool energy, and I'm along for the ride.
I just want to echo that I really like the art, Tristan Wright's art in here in particular. Yeah. I was trying to nail it, and this isn't exactly it, but it felt like a mix between like Yellow Submarine and 90s zine comics, sort of.
Yeah, definitely. Our crummy.
Yes, yeah, that's a good call out as well. So I really just like, beyond even the story, which Matt Boers has been doing a good job with these Toxic Avenger books, I think it's a really good, fun comic to look at, very bright and weird. Red Coat, number 14 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Brian Hitch. In this issue, Simon Pure is back at the burning of the White House. We're getting a tee up for an upcoming Ghost Machine book, First Ghost. And as we always say, First Ghost is the worst, Second Ghost is the best, Third Ghost is the one with the hairy chest. That's how I say it. Some people say treasure chest. I understand that. Over to you guys for a review of this comic book.
Well, yeah, just to echo what we've said.
Just to echo what Alex said.
I don't want to echo what Alex said.
Oh, that sounded like that's what you were saying.
Yeah, just real quick, do you think it's hairy chest or treasure chest, Pete?
Nope. But each time I see the red coat, I go, I don't know, man. You know, and then end of it.
You're grumbling.
Yeah, by the end of it, it wins me over every time. And it's impressive. Not only is the art amazing, but the story is really impressive. What they're able to do with this, the kind of dance between time that it's doing here. This is just, it's fun. It's impressive. There is a real cool look to it. And you got to be careful because now old GW is on the loose. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
That's George Washington. I mean, I agree with you. This book over the course of the 14 issues has really risen in my stack to a book that I'm like psyched about when I read it. Like, I think Simon Pure has that sort of like Han Solo energy of like someone who's like sort of roguish, up to his own thing. Then he's like, I gotta help out this person because he's inherently good at the end of the day. He's always wearing the red coat, even though it doesn't make any sense. I like that the book owns that and is like, why are you wearing that? That's old. It doesn't make sense here. So I'm very curious what this First Ghost thing is. The idea of like a whole George Washington is a ghost that seems a little not 100% hero, maybe a little villainous or something, is interesting. So it definitely got me interested in seeing what happens in this.
One World Under Doom, number 7 from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by R.B. Silva. After last issue, the entire world...
Arby's?
Yep. After last issue, the entire world knows that Doom has been sucking the energy out of Latverians in order to power his schemes and take over the world. And now the heroes are assembling to fight back against him. As the world turns against him as well, leading up to a climactic battle between Reed Richards and Dr. Doom with some surprising twists throughout. We've been very back and forth about this series, more back than forth, I would say. But how did you feel about this issue now that the secret is out?
I just, you know, I thought Doom was doing, you know, I didn't trust him at first, but it felt like he was doing the right thing. He was, you know, stopped wars. He did a bunch of good things. Everyone got free education. And now I find out that he's a villain?
Huh.
What? Huh. The guy in the big iron mask with the hood that he hides his face with and multiple capes? Two capes?
Bad? You got to double cape it sometimes.
Don't trust anyone with two capes. Yeah, I mean, what we've sort of complained about with this series, I think, is that we know that the other shoe's going to drop, and it needs to really surprise us or upset expectations to make that work. And, you know, I like the stuff that happens. I like Ryan North's just dialogue, I think, is good. The scientific supreme Reed Richards move I thought was interesting. We've seen a little bit of that continuity, I think, established over Doctor Strange runs over the past, like, decade. So there's some precedent there, and it was cool. But, like, I just feel like there was an inherent flaw in this just idea, and the crossover never really was able to leap over that, I think.
There's just some really badass panels in this. There's like a series of panels where it's just like Doom floating, and then it goes to like he's still in that same place, but everybody is just now like bones and dead. Just really just unbelievable artistically, some really impressive layouts here. Yeah, I mean, we really get inside some heads here, so Justin's got to love the humping of the minds that we get in this, and you know, Doom's got some fucked up thoughts. You know what I mean? It's crazy to be inside that head. But it's kind of great information for what's to come. And the battle between Reed and Doom here is great. It feels like a boss battle. You know, a little confusion at the end there because he's like, oh, I'm not going to kill you. But then it seems like he does. So that's a real kind of head scratcher. But other than that, I'm having a fun time, and it's a fun cover as well.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out what happened to Reed. I think I'm on the same page as Justin here, where it's just I wanted more out of this crossover. Like the first half of the book, I think it's an interesting idea to pace it out day by day as public sentiment turns against Doom.
Yeah, that's cool.
It leads to after an issue where it was literally Reed and Doom having a debate on a stage, which I didn't love, to then another half of an issue where people are just kind of like talking at us rather than doing things. When they eventually get to do things, we do get the face down between Reed and Doom. I thought that was good. That was exciting. But I don't know.
A face off than a face down. But,
right. But we've also seen that 1 billion times before. So I'm not going to be like, yes, finally this is happening. They're coming to blows because the stakes just still don't feel high enough, even though the whole world is at stake. I'm just kind of ready to move on and go on to the next thing. But we have two more issues. So there you go. Batman Dark Patterns, number 10 from DC Comics, written by Dan Waters, art by Hayden Sherman. This is the final batch of mystery for this book. And we are getting a baby-faced arsonist in Gotham City, as well as some big revelations about the drugged-up morgue doctor, whatever it is, that Batman has
doctor
been working
Alex, with. Doctor, Alex. Just a doctor. Sorry.
Doctor. Anyway, what'd you guys think about this?
I'm a morgue nurse. I like to just be there.
I don't know things, man. I only know comic books, and I know this is a great one. It has been ridiculously consistent. Hayden Sherman's art has been absolutely fantastic throughout. So really excited that they're starting to bring some threads together here in this final three-issue arc.
Yeah, and we get a cool cover here, which is great. It's this kind of weird porcelain doll face, creepy fire mask thing that kind of throws me a little bit. But
scares you?
Yeah, it's freaky, but it's also this. I'm like, I don't know how fire resistant that is. But anyways, there's this kind of like fire baby dude thing that's kind of insane. But also, it's just nice to see Alfred alive, you know what I mean? And worried about Batman. It just, A little moment there just makes me very, very happy.
Get so much Alfred this week.
Yeah, I love it. And
a little dose of vitamin A, is what Pete says.
Yeah. Get my vitamin shot. So, yeah, I just, yeah, this continues to be great.
The art is really standout here. There's a page that's like page 6 or page 5, something like that, where the fire, the child of fire, is reaching for this woman who's just looking in the window, and it's just it's amazing art.
Yeah,
really great. And I like this story. I like that there is something that is coming together from all the different arcs here. So definitely a great read for the art alone.
It Killed Everyone But Me, number one from Mad Cave Studios, written by Ryan Parrott, art by Letizia Cadenici. Per the title, we're following the lone survivor of something from back of the day. Everybody else was bloodily killed. Years later, she is a real estate agent, barely holding it together. And wouldn't you know it, some new murders in the same style start happening, and she gets embroiled in it. There's a lot more twists and turns and character things going on as we flash backwards and then forwards in time. I thought this was a great debut. I thought this was wild.
Parrothead.
I am a Parrothead. I do like Parrothead. But I also really liked Letizia Cadenici, who has done a bunch of horror stuff for Boom Studios in particular, including things in the world of Something is Killing the Children and a recent arc of Department of Truth as well. I think Letizia's art style is just great and a great match for this. Looking forward to what weirdness is going to come on this journey.
I really enjoyed this as well. I thought the art was excellent. It really matches the story super well. And the sense of dread around this and our real estate agent who is just over it. And then when we get some of the reveals at the end, I thought it was a nice, just supernatural landing place for our main character, and getting excited to see the next round of horror that we're going to get into.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what everybody's saying there. This is a solid start to an interesting, cool story with amazing art. You know, no offense to the real estate people out there, but yeah, I feel like, you know, there's something going on. You know, there's a darker side to real estate here, and I'm not sure if, like, you know, like the demon is inside of her or it's in this candle or what's going on, but...
Or if it's in the real estate license that people get.
You got to watch Million Dollar Listing. That shit is demonic.
Well, that just seems like it's fucking depressing as fuck, dude. I could not watch that. It's just like, wow, that's
so scary.
So much nicer than where I live.
Yeah, that's scary. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but that's the thing is, like, you're the one that's going to kill because their houses are too nice.
Mm-hmm.
What?
You gotta kill just
to stay. What I'm saying is, if you're listening to this podcast and you see somebody with a nice house, go into the house and kill them.
Wow, Alex, that seems like a really horrible message to send.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Alex is just like, eat the rich, bro. Eat the rich. Come on.
A lot of people who go out and kill people are like, I heard a message when I play the record backwards. And whoever does it from this can be like, I heard the guy say it directly to me. He said, go do that.
I mean, he told me to.
Makes it easy. He said,
am I legal? Like, if somebody actually did that, am I legally liable for that?
Yes.
Really? Here's the thing. It's not a great look. It's not a great look.
Yes.
Like, I'm not saying you're going to jail.
Jury of your peers would be like, yeah, he said
legit, I'd feel bad. I would feel like super bummed out.
You should. You shouldn't say it.
Wow. Hasn't thrown an asterisk after it, though, yet.
Yeah.
You
should say,
I guess not.
I don't condone. I'm not saying you should go out and do it. That's what you need to say. 100%
are all sorts of things I could say.
Oh. Yeah, Pete, should we do for the murder doc, should we do our talking heads together? Just the two of us, or do you want to be separate?
No, let's do it together.
I'm going to talk about some stuff about you too, just in case you end up killing people.
Oh, that'd be great. If you do the murder doc about my case that we're talking about and kicking off right now, can you call it It Killed Everyone But Me?
Yeah, that's nice. What an homage. What a nice moment.
That means me and Justin die.
Now, they're not going to kill us. We don't have nice houses. Well, Pete, you do.
Yeah.
You just won't tell us the address.
Oh, now I know why.
Yeah. Alex's cult of real estate killers.
Yes. Tune in next week for when we dox Pete. Ultimate Wolverine, number 9 from Marvel, written by Chris Condon, art by Alessandro Capuccio. This is following Wolverine as he is leading a band of mutants to take down a bunch of stuff, in this case a factory that turns out to have some horrible body horror sentinels featuring the head of Cyclops and the body of Havoc, which is pretty gross.
Pete, what a combo.
You got to love that.
Yeah, first off, cool cover. This is fun. This is just, I'm still really loving this kind of Winter Soldier Wolverine action. It's like everything you love about Wolverine, but less talking. I'm like, oh, this is perfect for me. I love this. This just continues to kick a lot of ass here, and love the art. It was a little weird how Sabretooth was like, Wolverine's just like a squirrel. Sometimes he like goes off on weird things where he attacks scientists. Don't worry about it. Let's everybody get, back on the plan here. So
I love these Sentinels in this. Very cool horror idea for the Ultimate Universe, especially given we haven't seen these characters in the Ultimate X-Men because that's doing its own thing. So, like, way to use the whole buffalo, including the body parts of these characters. And, yeah, I think this book has evolved a lot over the course of these 9 issues, and I really like this part. I think it's a great, like, strike force in the Ultimate Universe with surprises about what's happened to all these other mutants in it. It's great.
Radiant Black, number 37 from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins and Joe Clark, art by Marcelo Costa. Lots of stuff going on in this issue as Chicago is being locked down by military forces. Again, like, I don't know, maybe a little too soon.
Say something?
What?
This one really tracks as to, very on the nose.
Yes, a little on the nose, but there's also a lot of other stuff going on. Shift and I believe Radiant Red are hooking up, so that's happening. And also Marshall goes on a date to see, Pete, you had to be psyched about this, Mahershala Ali's Blade.
Shocked.
Cool. Yeah, it's out. It's out in the Massiverse. You got to check it out, Pete.
Oh, man, I got to go to Massiverse to see.
I got to tell you, I thought I missed an issue of this because so many things are going on here and so much seems to have happened between last issue and this one. But kudos to them for just like going for it and barreling forward.
I felt the same way. I was a little bit like, is this all this stuff? I thought there was going to be some kind of reveal later that like, that would make the first half make more sense. But I was like, no, it's just a story and I'm a little behind. This book is always done a great job of being very like internet-y and very like sort of finger on the pulse of stuff happening culture-wise. And then now it's dipping into a little more politic-y type stuff. So that's interesting. I'm curious because there's some immigration references in here with between the two dimensions. Obviously, the soldier stuff that Alex is saying, all of that feels very prescient, and everyone's just trying to make money for themselves, which is sort of like what has happened to our society. And this book is reflecting that with a pretty strong layer of sci-fi superhero stuff on top. So it's cool. I do want to digest. I might actually reread this going into the next issue because I feel like I need a little more of the just straight continuity getting into it.
Yeah, I love the kind of last panel reveal we get here with Horizon, which is very cool. Love the action sequences. Like the look of these kind of bad guys is really cool and fun. Interesting, fun banter talking about IRAs and private equity. So, yeah, it's a crazy amount of stuff happening right now, but this book is impressive what it can juggle and what it takes on and the depths in which it does it. So, I continue to be impressed by this series.
I love that IRA stuff. I sent this book right to my bank and said, make it happen.
Yeah, I was like, this is my 401k, please. And I haven't heard back from my bank yet.
I sent it to Ireland. Was that the wrong IRA?
Well, but you're retiring to the paramilitary group from the the 20th century. That's your retirement plan.
Yeah, exactly. I don't see any problems with it, and neither does my accountant. Superman, The Kryptonite Spectrum, number 2 from DC Comics, written by W. Maxwell Prince, art by Martin Morazzo. Superman has discovered a new batch of different types of kryptonite and is testing them out with Batman. In this one, He finds one that makes him smaller and one that makes him, finds one that makes him larger, and then they test out one that makes him smaller. Meanwhile, there's a big Superman kaiju battle in Metropolis. So fun stuff, gorgeous art. This is from the team behind Ice Cream Man, which we love so much, and they're just having an absolute blast with this.
The Martin Morazzo art is so good in this. And the way that W. Maxwell Prince is able to just lay enough of his Ice Cream Man style, like little creepiness and interesting character choices, like the woman all my work, years of my spreadsheets are gone. And then we actually, because it's flashing back in time, we get to see her being super cocky about it. And like, I forget who it is. Green Lantern's like, actually, you should press Control S pretty periodically if you're working on something really important, because you didn't save it. Like, it's just really fun and funny. It's my the kind of like
Control S joke. Oh my God.
Yeah. I loved it. And I love the Batman in this. He sort of makes mistakes in a fun way, is trying stuff out. The art of this, what's his name? The giant monster. No, the Kimo.
Kimo. Oh, I love Kimo. The Kimo in this issue.
This panel of Kimo is so dope. Like, I want that. I have some Martin Morazzo art. If that's at a con, I'm going to get a look at it.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I mean, this is just, first off, amazing cover. This art sets such a fun tone for this idea, and also kind of pulls it out of the main universe in such a great way, where we can kind of have these kind of different things that we normally wouldn't get. So this is great. It makes it feel separate enough where we can really dive in and not feel like it's affecting anything else. But man, slurping bad guy juice just seems like a horrible choice. You know, I was really surprised by that, but
keeps you young.
I guess.
If you could drink one villain, DC Comics or Marvel Comics, which villain would you drink?
Probably Condiment King.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
I love relish.
My first thought was Mr. Sinister, and I don't know why. I think I do know why, but I don't want to say it out loud.
Oh, that'd weird.
Be bad. Really? Okay, you don't want to say it out loud?
I don't want to say it out loud.
Okay, sign it.
No, I don't know signing. But my daughter did teach me this is applause and this is party.
Okay. You seem like a fun guy. That's the only words I need to know. Applause and party.
If Mr. Freeze could make me like a bunch of snow cones, I would eat those. You know what I mean?
Nice. Oh, okay. But you wouldn't drink it. You wouldn't be like, thanks for the snow cones, asshole.
I didn't drink it. Yeah. But he'd be saying like, ice to see you, Pete.
Oh, he was a Schwarzenegger Freeze. Okay. All right.
Yeah. That's I would drink him.
I'm more of the animated.
Ice series. To see you.
Ultimate Spider-Man Incursion number 4 from Marvel, written by Dennis Gapp and Cody Ziegler, art by Jonas Scharf. Miles Morales is traveling through the Ultimate Universe along with Maystorm from Ultimate X-Men and trying to track down his baby sister, who turns out is probably the key to either freeing the Maker or sealing him in the city that he's been in for 2 years forever. And they come face-to-face with magic. Pete, I believe you have 5 questions about this. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to let you guys know that summer is winding down, but that doesn't mean camp is over, because the Dennis Camp is here. And man, this is an absolute blast. Justin, I know you wanted to talk about this a little bit here.
Here's the thing. This series does not make sense to me.
Are you off the camp?
This is the only book with a Dennis Camp name on it that I have not enjoyed.
Wow. Yeah.
It is past Labor Day. School is back in session. Wow. Camp is over.
Yeah, camp is over.
I thought this was awesome. I love the action. I love the kind of spider god stuff that we got. Going up against magic, I thought that was cool. I mean, it lost me a little bit when you start stealing babies at the end. Like, you know, I'm not a fan of people stealing babies. But other than that, I was having a blast with this.
The Ultimate books have just done such a great job of, like, being in their own little world. And obviously they are going to come together. But, like, this crossing over with some of the Ultimate X-Men, Maystorm, I was like, I don't see that. The Ultimate X-Men, it feels like its own project, and I like that. It just doesn't match really. It just feels off. Something about it feels off.
Yeah, I don't know. There's just too much plot going on, I think, between what's happening with Miles Morales and also what's happening in the Ultimate Universe. Because just to point out something very specific about the relationship, I was like, okay, are we building up some sort of cross-universe romance between Miles Morales and Maystorm? I guess I can get into that. That'll be interesting. But they get to this cabin, and they're like, ooh, it's so cold in here. What should we do? Probably go to sleep. By the way, you have a girlfriend? And he's like, yep, love her and miss her. And I was like, all right. What? I mean, that's like, fine. What? Like, he doesn't need to cheat on his girlfriend or anything like that. But, like, you're clearly setting up a romantic, we're in a cold cabin, maybe we hook up and we feel weird about it on this journey thing. But I think it points to the essential problem of this is that it's skipping past any sort of character development for anybody in favor of, like, here's a tour of the Ultimate Universe for you, Miles. And maybe it's supposed to have some ramifications for him after the end of this year. Maybe also given the timing, this is how they start to free the Maker from his prison. But the plot is not as interesting as the characters when the rest of the Ultimate Universe, the thing that has been working, is the characters first. So it's a bit of a bummer.
That's just fun. Can't believe, yeah. Summer's over. Camp's over.
Camp's over, man. Yeah. Gotta come home. Gotta come home, pack up the sleeping bags, head home.
I want to drink bug juice and eat s'mores, you know?
Next summer, baby, next summer.
Allow me to break the ice.
Oh, boy.
Godzilla number 2 from IDW, written by Tim Seeley, art by Nicola Sismashija. We are in the new Kaisei era of Godzilla and a lot of different things going down as we have a human Jason with kaiju powers, a kaiju who can talk and is evil in the background, and of course, more kaiju and more superpowered people at the same time. We had Tim Seeley on the show a little while back talking about this one. But what did you guys think? Justin, you have an interesting expression on your face.
Sorry, I'm just looking up other Mr. Freeze quotes.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, man, that one. Let's kick some ice.
You know what? That movie is actually aged well, I will say.
Whoa. What? These quotes haven't aged well on my phone.
No, just in terms of
being... That's nipples on the suit, right?
Yeah, nipples on the suit. I thought you said nibbles, and I was like, nibbles on the suit? What are we talking? Oh, nipples on the suit. Yes.
Nibble the nipples.
Nibble the nipples.
That does not age
nibble
well.
Nipples.
Revenge is a dish best served cold.
Here's the thing. Batman Forever, bad. Batman Forever is like unequivocally like a slog, a terrible movie, absolutely all over the place and hard to watch. Batman and Robin, at least, is Joel Schumacher being like, this is my truest vision of Batman. Is it a crazy vision that barely makes any sense? Yes, but he is being true to himself. And as that, it like is a terrible movie that is actually kind of fun to watch.
We're talking about Godzilla here.
I feel a rewatch coming on.
Mm-hmm. That was all I had to say about Godzilla. Go ahead, Pete.
Well, so Godzilla here, first off, I love the title page. It's got a great picture of Godzilla breathing like a fire beam out of his mouth, which is awesome. We get killer leeches in this, which I don't know. I would like more Godzilla in this Godzilla book. I love the art style. I love the amount of action. Just give me some more Godzilla, please.
Well, it's building up a bit of a universe, and I honestly feel like we've been overexposed to some Godzilla lately, and I like that this book is taking pains to make Godzilla more of a distant threat so we can be a little bit more scared. Every other book is like, here's Godzilla, it's fine. It's fine that he's here. He's going to go away, and then everyone's dealing. This feels a little bit more like we're building something, so that is cool.
Feral, number 16 from Image Comics, written by Tony Fleece, art by Trish Forstner and Tone Rodriguez. Our main cats have been in Pet City, which should be a paradise in a zombie apocalypse. Excuse me, zombie cat apocalypse. But as they've discovered, the society eats cat fetuses because they like wet food. They got to have some wet food. They have plenty of dry food, but they want the wet food. And things are not going well. There you go. Pete, there's something you want to say, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, fucking Tony Fleece and Fleece is killing me here. The emotions are all right. So here we go. Okay. First, we get this kind of like...
Pete's overwhelmed. Listeners, Pete's overwhelmed right now.
So we make it to what we hope is a safe haven. And then it's like, no, dude, we eat babies here. And so you're like, oh, fuck, this sucks. So then you're like, oh, man, how are we going to get out of this? We got to play by mother's rules, which is just a creepy, fun kind of boss villain there with mother. And they just won't do it. They can't do it. So it's driving me nuts. And then what do? They open the doors inside to let the zombie monster cats in. You can't just leave us there, Tony. What the fuck, Tony? This is just the fucking emotions are all over the place. I'm fucking terrified that the art lulls you into this thing of like, oh, you remember Disney movies and isn't this sweet and lovely? And then it's all fucked up, man. It's all so fucked up in here.
See, I told you, P is overwhelmed right now because he's a cat guy. He loves these cats and he doesn't want to see him hurt.
That's right.
Even the bad cats.
Yep.
Right, Pete?
Yeah.
What I think is so amazing about this is these are classic zombie tropes. Like going to a place and being like, we're finally safe. Oh, they do something super fucked up here, often eating, cannibalizing humans, in this case cats. And then the way they get out is by bringing in the zombies to escape. So, like, that's a plot in multiple zombie things. Caught me off guard here. Thought it was great. I did not see it coming, and it was really fun and cool. This book is, I would call it more in the Don Bluth style of animation, mm-hmm. but I really like it, and it is good.
Speaking of nibbles on nipples, what do you think about the udders on that mama cat? Pete?
Yeah.
Alex, what the fuck, man?
Does it make you thirsty, Pete?
No. No, it doesn't.
Really?
Some of that yum, yum milk?
Yeah. I don't know. Honest. Be honest.
Honest, Pete. You read this book and you drank a giant glass of, like, room temperature milk.
No.
After you saw that scene with all the
nips. Yeah, this is actually an interesting fact. I don't know if you guys do this, but cats have nipples, so you can technically milk them. You can actually milk anything with nipples. Did you know that, Pete?
Stop it. Ben Stiller's not
Pete,
here.
You have to finish it.
No, I
you
don't.
Have to finish. You have to. No, I don't. You have to. It's killing you right now. No.
You have to finish what Alex started.
No, I do not.
You have to. It's now's the time. You're the perfect aging into this role, Pete.
No way. And what's fun is Alex tried to do it on the live show. He was like, nobody? I was like, that's right.
Oh, nobody. Boy. Captain America number 3 from Marvel, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Valerio Schiti. We are picking up right after Captain America was woken up out of the ice, which is now, thanks to a sliding timeline, a little somewhere in the 2000s, certainly after 9/11. And he has met another Captain America named David Colton, who was made while he was on ice. They're also coming to blows with Dr. Doom, who is early in his own career. What do you guys think about this 3 issues in? Our Secret Wars is the name of it.
It's pretty weird, but mm-hmm. I do like it. And, like, honestly, of all the Doctor Doom we've seen in the last couple of months, I like this Doom. This Doom felt good. Like, he was diabolical, but also felt like the reasonable Doom that we've seen in some of the better portrayals of him over the years. So, like, that was cool. I think the art is really nice, and I like that this has some, I wouldn't say it's like super political, but it's like, it feels like it's a hero dealing with something important in this comic.
Yeah, I agree. This is awesome. I love the action. I love the pace. Love the art. You know, Doom and Cap facing off here. This is a great badass battle here. This is a ton of fun. I very much enjoyed it.
Chip Zdarsky writes a really good Cap. Like, you could hear, it feels very much like a movie Cap. You could almost hear Chris Evans delivering every single one of these lines, which is very fun. I'm not quite sure about what's happening around it. Like, I really like the David Colton flashback scenes, but there's a disconnect between what's happening with David Colton and what's happening with Captain America right now that I'm not... It seems like they're going to connect in the next issue, so we'll find out what it is. But there's sort of like 2 trades running at the moment.
Well, and I will say it's hard to do sort of three different scenes, two of which feature the same character, one present, one flashback. Because when you cut between, I feel like I'm like, oh, what? Where is this guy? Mm-hmm. Is this present Daed where he's doing this mission, or is this the flashback? To the thing? So it just feels like it takes your brain a second to sort of triangulate those three separate ideas. That's the only stumbling block I thought in this issue.
And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comics, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, Pete, I have nipples. Can you milk me?
Wow, that's gross. Perfect. To say to somebody.
Well, Pete denying Meet the Parents knowledge here.
There's a new one coming.
One of the
okay?
cultural touchstones.
There's a new one.
Pete, you're basically a Fokker.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.